Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 26th through July 6th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
This is the 1895 Podcast, official podcast of Shelburne FC, bringing you news, views and interviews from inside Tolka Park, Dublin's finest since 1895. Here's your host, Stephen Doody.
Hello, welcome to the 1895 Podcast, the official podcast of Shelburne Football Club. The Reds rallied to rescue a point at the RSC. Boydy bagged an equaliser, then Boydy boiled over. Nevertheless, the Reds got a point on the board in a difficult game in the sunny southeast. In the 1895 group chat this week, we'll hear from Gav Malloy on his new contract. Good old John Riley drops in to give us an update on the goings-on in the bar ahead of the Ringsend Derby on Friday. And Piers Butler fills us in on other major and minor developments around Tolka Park. Throw in the Richie Rankins, some listener questions, and we are flat out again this week. To do it all with me, Ben Cleary. Ben, how are you?
Doody, thanks for having me back yet again. I always appreciate the invite.
And Adam Leonard. Ads, what's the story?
What's the crack, Steve? Yeah, happy to be back again. Boydy boiled over. How long have you had that in your notes, Steve, ready to go?
you know what always seems to happen? I do sit down to do those kind of intros and because it stops you stuttering and coming and going. And there always seems to be a letter, a particular letter always seems to stick out for some reason. And on that one, it was R, and then with the B and Boydy, I just thought, I don't know, lost the plot a little bit. But look, it sounded all right, so here we go. good start this week, anyway. I botched one intro, had to start again because Ben kept laughing. So,
oh, yeah, that was definitely the reason the intro was laughing, not because just turned your microphone off.
Yeah, speaking of microphones, we are in the process of getting me an actual proper microphone to use. I know there's been a couple of issues with the sound quality in the last couple of weeks, so we're in the process of fixing that. Never fear. Look, let's go straight to Watford. I would look at it as a point gained rather than two dropped in the end, the way things panned out. But, Ads, what did you make of it?
Yeah, I tend to agree, Steve. Yeah, look at, I think going in, we all kind of said last week that we thought we were going to maybe run away with it somewhat comfortably. And I think that's probably just excitement boiling over more than anything. It was always going to be a cagey first affair of the season. But yeah, definitely a point gained more so than 2 points dropped. It was one of them where when we got the goal, I felt we could get a second goal in quick succession. Obviously, what happens, and we didn't. But definitely happier with a point than what I would have been going into it.
Yeah, we'll get to the Boydy thing shortly. We actually got a listener question sent in over that, so we will we'll address the Boydy red card shortly. Ben, it was a kind of a, we looked a bit shell shocked. I thought in the first half just looked like conceding after 3 minutes the way we did. So I was going to push it on the back foot a little bit, but we just looked a bit, I don't know, I wouldn't say overawed by the occasion. It wasn't that big of an occasion. Jesus, in Waterford, back in the Premier Division. It's no cup final or European game, but we just looked, just took us time to settle in, I think. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think absolutely. I think the whole first half, look, you could basically write us off for it because we just weren't at the races. The manager said it, Mark Hoyle said it, John O'Sullivan said it. It's not a something people have shied away from, the performance in the first half wasn't up to scratch. Definitely, we were a bit shell-shocked. I'd say it was just the case of, look, conditions didn't help, but I'm not saying you can sit there and say, ah, the pitch wasn't good, that's why we weren't good. But look, they're playing against the wind, the rain. They hit you with that quick over-the-top ball. a lot of pace in behind, and look, you're always going to be on the back foot, and that's just what happened. I think to go in at half time only one down was probably flattering for us, because I think after the first one, especially with it coming so early, you just looked around and you're like, yep, that's the Shells I know and love, because you're just expecting everything to go very, very wrong. But look, I think the second half performance was definitely much better, and one the players can look at and say, we can build on that. And I think they will. I think they're going to go in and bounce into this week.
As I, when I watched the game back, kind of the first thing I noticed was there was probably a tone set right at the start of the game with the tip off. Their captain, I think it's Barry Bagley, is it? Or something like that his name is. Yeah, Barry Bagley. He flew into a tackle on Mark Hoyle. The ball ended up at Conor Cairns' feet. Then Conor kind of mishit a clearance. Then Gano had a chance to slip a ball up the line. He kind of mishit it and went straight out for a throw-in. That first kind of 30 seconds to a minute of the game probably set a tone for the rest of the half.
Yeah, it did, and even the goal that Waterford get comes from our set piece, doesn't it? They get away on the counter, and like the goal itself is quite lucky. Like, I mean, it's a good ball across by Asamoah, takes the deflection off. Was it Tariq? Like, to be honest with you, they did kind of set the tone, and I think we kind of struggled early on. And I do agree with Ben; conditions weren't great. I thought the pitch was not up to scratch for me. And anyways, but. Look, I just think they kind of got at us early on, and I think it would have been going into the game, you would have said, right, get in at half time, nil all, or hopefully one or two up maybe, and then second half pounce, but it just wasn't the case. I just think Waterford were fully deserving early on, and you're dead right, they did set the tone, and we weren't really up to scratch for the first half, and I think everyone's kind of in agreement with that.
You know, there was loads of noise around the pitch, and everyone was saying the pitch was brutal, and the pitch was pretty bad, in fairness. Like, we were on it for a second. Ben, you thankfully dodged the pitch in your situation after the game, but the pitch wasn't great, but I had kind of all weekend mulling over the game. I was like, people going on about the pitch, will you piss off talking about the pitch, nothing to do with the pitch, nothing to do with the pitch. And then I was talking to Mark Hoyle down in Talca today, and I said to him how bad actually was the pitch to play on, and the first thing out of his mouth was, sure, that's no excuse for, you know, the way we played. And I think, I don't know whether I was trying to make excuses or stop myself from trying to make an excuse. Like, yeah, the pitch was shite. Let's call a spade, but shite for both teams, Ben, no?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you can't turn around and say, we weren't at it because the pitch wasn't good. You know, look, if you're expecting every pitch in the country to be good, you're in for a rude awakening.
Yeah, like, especially this Friday.
Oh, well, you said it, not me. I'm not getting in trouble for that. But yeah, I think you can't turn around and say, look, the pitch is there. It's an excuse. Both teams did have to play on it. And I think it just favoured the game plan that Waterford went in with. Look, it's no excuse for the first half, but we pride ourselves in the way we play. I think we have an identity, a real strong sense of team. We pass it around a lot. We good build up, and I think Waterford just over the top running in, it worked out better, especially in those conditions. And look, they got the reward for it straight away.
Adam, did you think we were as bad as people made out we were?
No. I think we love an overreaction, don't we, in general, but it wasn't, like, I think we expect a certain standard with this side, and I don't think it was that standard, and I think, in a sense, we're a victim of said standard. And first game of the season, away at newly promoted side, conditions aside, whatever, like, it's a tough game, you know, they're right for it down there, and you go down there, and, you know, we were quite confident on the podcast last week. I think even Ben was saying, like, you think Twofold might go down and stuff, but still, they're still back, and they have quality players, and I think it was a case of them being quite good and you know, using a plan that clearly worked well, and then we just couldn't cope. But that's not down to our deficiencies. I think that's down to Waterford being up for it. Not that we weren't, but To say it was catastrophic, or I've seen a lot going around on Twitter and even in the ground, you know, oh, this is the worst I've seen this play in years, yada yada. Terrible carry on, like, do you know, I wasn't on the same opinion, but
I for the life of me, and look, it can very easily. It can very easily come across here that, you know what, we'll tow the club line. You know, we won't kind of have a pop at players because, you know, it's the official club podcast and we don't want to do that. And, like, you don't want to be coming on, like, bashing players. And, you know, I was a bit of, you know, having a pop at players and... For somebody to come out, look, we were shite in the first half. I thought, particularly in midfield, we were really, really poor. I thought we struggled, just did not get up to the level of the game at all. And then, like, you struggle then because you have no foothold in the game. But people saying that we were, like, it's as bad a performance as they've seen in years and worst performance under Duffer. Were they not at the second game of the season in Duffer's first year, the UCD game away? Were they not at the Finn Harps game at home where we got spanked? Like, I just... Calling that the worst performance in years was just way, way, way over the top, in my opinion. Because that's... You can either say that's how sad my life is or that's how much I want to actually dodge doing my own day job. But we really weren't that bad. There was passages, even in that first half. Like, we put some good moves together. I just felt... In the final third, it just never clicked. And that wasn't anyone's fault. There was no lack of endeavour from Matty Smith, Liam Burt, John O'Sullivan, even from the two boys in the middle, Jay. Like that. It was just more... I just felt it didn't click. We moved the ball really well in our own half. I thought, like, between that kind of back four, back five, looked really comfortable in possession. Didn't really look like giving it away a whole lot, I didn't think. But it was like just when it got up to that final third, it just kind of hit a bit of a block. Now, that can be down to loads of stuff. That is maybe where the pitch can become a factor. You know, balls bouncing around, taking funny hops. For Liam Burt and Matty Smith in particular, I thought they'd do something brilliant. They'd skin somebody and then, or they'd take an unbelievable first touch and the ball would just get away from them. And, like, that's no major shape issue or no tactical issue. Just sometimes it just doesn't really happen. And the manager mentioned that after the game, I think it was in the interview with Darren, that just individually we weren't quite at it. Like, it's not, I don't think it's like a wholesale problem between the whole group. It's just kind of didn't play brilliantly. And sometimes it just happens. It's a pity it was in the first game when there was so much buzz and kind of excitement around the game. Now, I was still buzzing after it that we did draw because we drew not playing particularly well, which I think is always a good sign. I got a lot of stick in 2021 for saying it was a market champions. I'm not going to go that far and say we're going to be the champions, but not playing well and getting a point in Waterford for me is still a real positive. Ben, there's a very, very tall elephant in the room that we probably need to address. And I'm going to go, we'll go to a listener comment first. This was sent in to the 1895. And while we're on the subject, you can send your voice notes in, you can send a text in if you'd rather. It was all text this week. No voice notes from supporters this week. But if you do want to get involved, it's 085-166-6784. Ben, Adam. There is a large elephant in the room that we need to address. The best way to address it is to go straight to the question that was asked. It was sent into the 1895 group chat. So, lads, one for the podcast. Am I the only one who has had enough of Boydie not being able to control his temper? There's been too many incidents over the last few years with each one impacting the game and or the rest of the team to one degree or another. Just talk to fans of his past clubs. They have similar tales to tell. When is the time to say enough is enough? To tell him to grow up? Is it wrong to suggest he's a liability due to this element of his game? Some will say, didn't he score the goal on Friday? I say that's his job as a striker. What's not part of his job is lashing out regularly and excessively to the point that he gets sent off. The momentum had pivoted to us on Friday night. The goal emphasised that.
and we should and could have capitalised on that momentum had we not been reduced to 10 men. It's just not good enough at this level especially. That's my humble opinion. I'd be interested in your views. Thanks, Julie. Weigh in, men. Who wants to go first?
Do you want to go ahead, Ben?
Well, look, if you're just teeing me up for it. I'd be inclined not to agree. I won't lie to you. Look, you can sit there and say it's a disgrace, you know, he can't be at that, it shouldn't be part of his game, but it's just pure passion. Like, the man wears his heart on his sleeve, and I think everyone knows that, and everyone uses that against him most of the time, but he just runs himself ragged for the team. He's a massive, massive team player, and it's very hard to turn around and say, oh, well, you can't just say he scored. And the momentum shift, if he doesn't come on, he doesn't get the goal. There's no momentum shift. So I don't think you should disregard him coming on and getting the goal. Should he have got sent off? I'm not justifying the red card. It was silly. He knows himself it was silly. He doesn't need everyone online hammering him. He definitely probably doesn't need us doing it. I'm sure he's gotten it from his teammates. He's gotten it from the manager. It'll be dealt with, I'm sure. And I think he'll bounce back. And I think he's a massive asset to say that it's not good enough. Like, he's a literal game changer. He came on and changed the game. Without him, there's no point. So, in my mind, I think it's, I don't want to say ridiculous, but I just, it's a massive overreaction, I think. I think if we win that game, nobody looks at the outcome of the red card. I think because it's a one all and they didn't play, the performance wasn't particularly good, I think people are focusing on, they're looking for a scapegoat and they're looking for someone to say it's your fault. But without him, I don't think we're in a position. I don't know if that's a mad shout. You may disagree. I'll open it to the floor, Adam. What's your...
I tend to agree. Like, without Sean Boyd, I don't think we're, you know, as far along as we are in this project with Duffer. And, like, I personally don't understand how many, or like, why so many heads have fallen off one game into the season. Like, I think it's madness.
Are you really that surprised, Adam?
To be honest with you, no, but at the same time, Steve, the game in, like, we're all human at the end of the day. Sean Boyd's after making a mistake. He doesn't need all of us coming on and saying he made a mistake. I'm sure he's well aware. Like Ben said, he comes on, scores, makes a nuisance of himself. I think that's all a part of his game. Do you know, I think it's give and take, you know, and if Sean Boyd finishes the season on, I don't know, let's say 15 plus goals and gets 3 red cards, like, personally speaking, I'd be fairly grateful for the 15 goals. The 3 red cards, maybe not so much, but still, I think it's a part of his game. I just think it's a bit of an overreaction, but we're all entitled to our opinion, you know, but I firmly believe Sean Boyd is a passionate Shells fan, and the way I see him on the pitch is I see him as one of us up front for Shells. You know, he's trying his best for the club.
Yeah, I definitely agree with two of you. Look, it's obviously stupid. It really is. Like, there's no, you can't defend it. The manager didn't try and defend him. The two boys who spoke to the press afterwards didn't try and defend it. But I'm in your camp, Adam. Like, I think saying, I don't want to hear anyone mention, well, he scored, but he did. Like, nobody else scored for Sheld, but he did. So, I mean, you can look at it as, yeah, we probably didn't want to win the game. Look, we could have kept 11 players in the pitch and lost 2-1 just as much as we could have won 2-1. So that's all kind of fantasy land. Like, maybe this, maybe that could have happened. But it didn't happen. What happened is, Boydie came on, equalised, had a rush of blood to the head, and I had a small interaction with him after the game, and he was good. He was absolutely devastated. So, like, it's not this type of thing that Boydie just, you know, does what he does and, you know, swans off, gets back on the bus after the game. Not like that at all. He was gutted. Look, everyone was a bit pissed off at him, understandably, but draw a line, move on. It's football, it happens. It could very easily happen. I'd rather he kind of stops getting the yellows. Would probably bother me a little bit more. Like, we've seen some mad yellows from Boydie. My favourite being the one in Dalymount where he got yellowed for running onto the pitch appealing for a penalty. Like, as you said, Ads, he's just a really passionate fella and he loves it here and he's just trying to do his best. He made a mistake, calling for his head, wanting him thrown out, calling him a liability, way, way, way over the top for me. That's just me personally. It just happens, I think you two are the same. We may hear from another voice, like if anyone wants to get in touch with us, again, to argue back, if you want. The group chat is always open. It's 085-166-6784. Do get in touch. And let us know. Tell us why Boydie should be stuck in the guillotine and have rotten fruit thrown at him in the town square. I certainly think it was a little bit of an over-the-top reaction from a good few people. Ben, positives from Friday in terms of performers, who would you be leaning on?
I think looking at Liam Burt, I think looked really good. John O'Sullivan definitely was probably the best player on the pitch, and he's one that when he was announced, everyone was calling for his head before a ball was kicked, saying, oh, that's not the caliber of player we want. That's not a signing that fits the manager. That's not this, that's not that. Because he had a reputation from across the road, as he says himself. But yeah, I think he's definitely a standout for me. There was like, amongst it all, when you look at it and say, oh, it wasn't a great performance, there were some good individual performers. Gav Malloy as well, just consistent, I suppose. Lewis Temple coming in, didn't look out of place at all. I think there's a lot of positives to take from the game, and especially from individual standpoints and individual player performances, definitely.
Lewis Temple was one for me, 100%. Young lads, first league start, did not look one bit out of place. Sometimes those young lads, when they go in, you'd spot them, you know, straight away, you'd be going, right, that's a young kid playing. No sense of that. He was good with the ball. He was good in the air. Gave away a couple of fouls that he needed to give away. Another one who really impressed me was actually Cam. Cam Edwards, when he came on, I thought was brilliant.
Yeah,
Cam. He'd done that typical Cam thing where he kind of needed 5 minutes to kind of defrost or heat up, whatever way you kind of want to put it. But, I mean, he was really, really good. He was a man possessed. He had one moment I enjoyed in the corner where the Shells crowd was. It was not too long after he'd come on. Obviously, he came on for the injured Shane Griffin. But that lad... It was Asamoah, I think, wasn't it his name? The lad played out on the right. Let's be honest, rinsed JJ for the goal. He tried to do something similar to Cam in the corner flag. Cam just creased him. Just absolutely took him out of it. Took the yellow. He didn't even look back to see if he was getting the yellow. He just made the tackle and walked off, presuming it was coming. He was really, really good. Again, don't want to be picking on people, but I thought midfield we were pretty poor. And again, like Ben, myself and yourself seeing Mark today, so he was the first one to say it. The manager had a good line today down the talk, actually, about Mark's 52 minutes or whatever it was that he played in. So
I think he got 58,
there you go. Look, we weren't great in the middle. We did struggle to kind of get a foothold in the game because of it. I'm rambling a bit now, but another kind of an area that just we struggled with and it kind of went through the whole game was Conor Cairns. Now look, I'm not one for singling out keepers. He just looked a bit nervy, I think was probably the perfect way of putting it. It reminded me an awful lot of the Balls game in Tolga last season. Don't know if he's remember that one where he just kind of don't know what it is, like just got a little bit rattled early on and just kind of struggled to settle back down. Now, having said that, he pulled off a worldie of a save. It was actually the referee brought it back for a free kick, just kind of on the byline. But it was a cross, and I think it was Almond headed it back across, and Cairn somehow pulled it out of the corner. I don't know how he did, but again, it's not cause for concern or anything like that. Just maybe we'll put it down to first day jitters. Adds any particular impressive displays or not so impressive?
Yeah, I think I kind of echo what you said. I think John O'Sullivan in particular was someone I was very impressed with. Did not stop running, and I think there was a lot of jab sent on, wasn't it, from, you know, up the road and stuff. Like, I thought he performed very well. Didn't, you know, get a goal or an assist in the end, but he did have a good game. I thought Evan Caffrey, when he came on, Steve, was very good. We're talking about the midfielders kind of not having a bit of an off day. I thought Caffrey was very good when he came on. Himself and Jarvis, I thought, obviously, along with Boydie when he comes on, I thought they were the real game changers. Jarvis's run for the goal is really good. It's typical Will Jarvis since he's come to Shells and halfway through last season, so hopefully he gets a few more minutes. But yeah, Liam Burt as well. I think, will he be out on Friday? I'm pretty sure he is, because he's on loan.
Yeah, he's missing the game Friday.
So you'd imagine Will Jarvis will start there. But I do think that the changes overall changed the game. I thought Shane Farrell as well was very good when he came on. So I suppose it shows the squad depth we have there as well. And it'll be interesting to see what the side is on Friday now, considering Burt is out, obviously being on loan and stuff. So, but yeah, I think individually there was a lot of good performances. Overall just didn't kind of come together.
Yeah, it was probably a lot of the League of Ireland community have kind of tarred the Shells team with like a typical Damien Duff performance, which is the biggest load of nonsense. Everyone just seems to think that it's negative and it's all this type of crack. It's just not. If you took your time to actually watch a couple of games, you'd realise it's not. But one hallmark of a Duffer team is that a lack of effort just won't be accepted. It just won't happen. And that's one thing from 1 to 11. Everyone ran themselves into the ground, didn't stop working hard. And you could probably say got a reward from it in the end, because like the goal, Jarvis just put his head down and started running. And kind of a bit of ricochet in the box. Shane Farrell with a real cool head squares the body for a great finish. Ben, the bench again, like I was always looking at other people's benches last year and going, geez, imagine being able to bring players like that on. Like the players we brought on Friday were Cam Ledwich, Shane Farrell, Evan Caffrey, Will Jarvis, and Sean Boyd. It's not a bad old bench, really, is it?
Yeah, I think it's one thing we've spoken about a good bit on the pod, and that's just having that depth there. Like that's a lot of quality to be able to introduce to a game. And I think it really stood to us in terms of getting a result. I think you spoke about Shane Farrell there. I think his maturity in the squad and what he did to get the assist there, I think 3 or 4 years ago, maybe that's he takes it in a stride and tries to get a shot off, but just complete selflessness, working it across. I think that, again, another hallmark of a Duffer team of making that extra pass. And, you know, Boydie is rewarded with the goal. But like it's crazy when you think there was times last season where, and this is no knock on Evan Caffrey, that he had to play as a centre forward because we just didn't have the personnel there. And then you look at what's left on the bench, like Keith Ward is left on the bench, Jad Hakiki, like Dean Williams, they're players that could change a game for most teams. So I think it's great going forward, and I think it's why maybe that pressure is not really there, or it's a bit lessened a bit of saying, you know, when a player goes down, they're like, oh no, we're in trouble here, because there is real quality on our bench this year.
Yeah, speaking of players going down and everyone kind of going, oh no, Griff obviously went off injured early in the first half on Friday. I'm not sure of the update on Griff, to be totally honest. Ben, you may have heard differently, but Paddy Barrett has been training fine, as far as I'm aware. So, probably no need to panic there just yet. But, ads, when you see Griff go down so early on in the game, is it still one of those, you know, heart in the mouth, like, oh no, here we go?
I think, given how the game was and how it started, I think we're all probably going, Jesus wept, we're not getting anything out of here. But no, to answer your question, no, I wouldn't say so. I think, like you said about Lewis Temple and like Cam comes on, I think, like you said about the yellow card he got, sometimes you need that, you know. Sometimes you kind of need to lay down a marker and stuff. And the deputies that we have now are players of real quality. And like, don't get me wrong, when the starting 11 comes out, you do want to see the likes of Shane Griffin and Paddy Barrett starting. But I don't think it's as much of a problem as what it might have been. I know there was a question in the group chat about, you know, what kind of player would you be worried about if he was out missing? But I think defence, I don't think there's that same issue anymore as well there would have been years gone by.
No, I'd agree with that. That question I have here in front of me came in from Paul. It was, is there one player in this current squad that if we lost them, we would be in major trouble? I'm thinking like Luke Byrne in past seasons, where like if we seen Luke go down injured, you'd go, oh no, we are in major trouble. Ben, is there anyone in that kind of starting 11 that, look, obviously you're going to be worried if any player goes down injured, but is there anyone in particular that if they got injured or like a long-term injury, you'd go, oh no, we are in major bother?
I think for me, it would have to be Gav Malloy. The composure, the quality, he plays way beyond his years. Like, he's just that, he brings that kind of same calmness to the back line that a player like Luke Byrne did. And he has similar abilities and leadership qualities. So he's one that if he goes down, look, absolutely, there's players there that will step up. But he's one that you'd rather have in the team than not, I suppose, for me, definitely.
Ben, teeing me up for the perfect segue. Gav was generous enough with his time this week. He sent us a voice note into the 1895 group chat around Waterford, around Rovers, and around his new contract. So here he is, Gav Malloy.
How are you, lads? If I'm going to look back to Friday against Waterford, I think we know wasn't good enough. We weren't at the level we need to be at. And now we can get to. I think it was a bit of a naive performance on our part. First league game back, it's always going to be hectic. Crowds are going to be up for it. Waterford were definitely up for it more than us. And I think it showed in that first half, but then I think we grew into it a bit. Got the goal, bit of momentum, I thought, then we were actually going to go on and win the game, but then the red card kind of ruined their momentum. And I think under the circumstances, it was probably a good point for us, but I think it was one to kind of, a performance to forget, I'd say. But we know what we've done wrong and we know how to work on it. We've already been started that work for Friday coming. And then on to Friday, I think it's a massive game already. We all know what Rovers bring. It's one of the fixtures that I'd say all the players look for in the calendar. And I think we're all just buzzing to be back in Tolka, seeing it full to the rafters. I think by now it's sold out. So yeah, I'm absolutely buzzing to walk out of the tunnel and see everyone and put on a performance, because we know we need to after Friday gone. And then if I'm going to talk about my extension, so I signed an extension last week, and yeah, I'm just really grateful to be in the position I'm in. I think this time 2 years ago, I probably didn't know where I was going to be. I didn't know where I was going to play, if I was going to play much. I was thinking about going out on loan, and then kept at it though, and took my chance, and I haven't looked back since. And even last season, I absolutely loved it. Getting Europe was massive for the club, and I can't wait to be a part of it in the future, and I can't wait to play in Europe this year.
The thought of Gav Malloy there, gents, interestingly, he mentions there that the group knew they weren't good enough. Is that, like, I know that that's not always a normal thing where players will accept, you know, look, we were not good today. Sometimes it's, look, we mentioned the pitch, we mentioned the weather. People can try and find excuses, but Gav kind of speaks wise beyond his years there, that the players know it wasn't good enough. And how important do you think that being able to recognise the poor performance is going to help going into the Rovers game?
Yeah, I think it's going to be massive. Sorry, ads, I'll just jump in there. I think it's massive, because it just shows the maturity of Gab, the maturity of the squad, and I suppose the mentality that they all have of, they can recognise their shortcomings and say, this wasn't good, we are not proud of this, we can do better and we will do better. It takes a lot to admit that. I think for a lot of people, it's very hard to admit when they're wrong or when they've done something wrong. So if the squad can sit there and look at themselves and say, we have to do better, it's only a positive for me.
That's...
Yeah, no, look, I think Gav speaks like a real leader, doesn't he? He got the armband off Mark Coyle on Friday. Correct me if I'm wrong. I just think he speaks like a leader. He speaks like someone, a bit like Sean Boyd. He has a real passion for the club. Obviously, you know, doesn't necessarily act like Boyd, but he's a real calm kind of, you know, reassuring person to have as well. And yeah, look, he would be the one player, Ben mentioned earlier, that if he was to go down injured, you would kind of be a bit worried. But I think that just speaks volume of his quality. And yeah, he's definitely way beyond his years. And yeah, really quality player.
The one thing throwing me off about Gav Malloy at the minute is his hair. It's very unsettling.
Just not used to it, yeah.
I was watching the warm-up there on Friday. It might have been Reggie. I turned around to him and was like, who's that? Like, my headlights wouldn't be the best anyway. I was like, now, who on earth is that? It's Gav. It's just Gav Malloy with hair, really. But yeah, it's definitely, it's throwing me off a little bit. On the subject of the 1895 group chat, I mentioned in the intro that we did get voice notes in from John Riley from the bar and Pierce Butler about various improvements we've made around Tolke. Let's hear from the two lads now. You'll hear from John Riley first and Pierce Butler second.
Hey, lads, JR here. Just give you a quick update on the bar that you can share with everyone on the podcast. So from the outside coming in, so from the Richmond Road entrance, we have a new frame going up around the doors. The old one was in need of replacing. It was quite rotten at this stage. And yeah, just needed freshening up. So we've got a new one put in there. Shell's fan Stephen O'Connor done that for us. Very kind of him to do that. So he's built a new frame. It's up now. Just needs to be painted up now, which I think some of the BD lads might have some ideas for it. So I'm gonna leave that in their capable hands. Moving in, kind of down that little tunnel way into the bar. We have a graffiti artist coming in to freshen up the walls there. Again, that's through the BD lads as well. So, yeah, look, I'm sure it'll look brilliant once it's done, and it'll just freshen the whole place up and brighten the whole place up. Going down into the bar, into the toilets, have been ripped out. Shea Weaver was in there today with his team, so they're all coming out. Big job going on in there, which I think everyone would agree needs to be done, needs to be upgraded, and it'll look great once it's done. We'll all be done for Friday. So what's happening there is the toilets are coming out. There's new ones going in. Proper ventilation going in. It's going to be painted. So yeah, look, it'll be a huge improvement compared to what's there at the minute. Inside the bar then, a few new appliances have gone in. We have new taps gone in as well. So for this season, we have Madry and Carling on tap. That's to go with the Guinness and the Pale Ale as well. Getting the new taps in, unfortunately, we had to take out the Carlsberg tap. So this year it'll be Guinness, Madry, Carling and Pale Ale on tap. And the rest of the stock is as it was last year. On match days now as well, we're going to start on Friday at halftime. We'll have a bottle and a can bar, which will be operating. I'll send the details off it to the media lads probably on Wednesday or Thursday and get them to post out. Just one or two little things we need to iron out first. That will be happening this Friday. We'll start that and at half time, and hopefully if there's need for it, we'll do it before the game as well moving forward. We will be looking, once the season gets up and running properly, we'll be looking to possibly stream some of the away games anyway, and we'll also be looking to get the bar open for the supporters bus before going. Again, it'll just rely on, or depend, sorry, on availability. As most of you know, most of the bar staff are volunteers, so it's just getting someone there to do it, but it is something that we're looking at, and we'll hopefully have an update on that in a couple of weeks. The second bar inside, a few people have asked me about what used to be known as the players bar, so we are getting taps put back in there. They were actually installed today, I believe. I'll double check that this evening. Well, I think they went in today, and we're just waiting for the BOC gas line to be put in, and then we'll start serving in there. I think that's the plan anyway. Again, I'll keep you posted on that. I'll send the lads an update on that once I have it. And then a few people have also asked me about the fan zone bar over the far side. So we're still waiting on the license to come through. It's a little more complicated than we first thought. It's not the most usual request that the solicitors have got about extending a license, so there's a little bit of digging around and looking into it, but it's in their hands at the minute. And again, that's where we are with it. As soon as we have a further update on that, I will again let the lads know, and they can put it up on the podcast or on the website. And that's pretty much it from the bar. And if, as always, if anyone is interested in giving us a dig out, by all means, reach out to us. Any functions, anything like that, we're here. We're open for business. And yeah, that's it. Speak to you soon, lads. Take care.
How's it going, lads? So just a brief note on the improvements that have gone into place and are continuing to go into place in Tolka Park for the upcoming season. So first and foremost, the PA system is completely installed and ready to go for Friday. And in conjunction with that, we've prepared a new playlist, which is designed to incorporate both generically popular songs and songs that are specifically popular among the Shells fan base, to ensure that we cater to as many different cohorts of the fan base as possible, so everyone's as happy as we can possibly make them with regard to the match night music. As well as that, the scoreboard is fully installed and ready to go for Friday. That's positioned at the Ballybock end. We're also there's plans in place to design a mural just behind where the scoreboard is currently placed at the Ballybock end, to try and brighten up that area a little bit. So the final touches are just being made on the design, and then works are going to commence on that, and hopefully that will be completed in a matter of weeks, if not months. In addition to that mural, there's going to be another paint job done as you walk in at the Drumcondra end on the wall on your left. That design will be made after the one on the Ballybock end is completed, but it's just done to give more of a sense of you're walking into a football stadium as you go into Tolka Park on a match night. And finally, there are corrugated boards going in depicting momentous moments in Shell's history on the exterior wall of Tolka as you walk down Richmond Road. So they are the ones that we are going to hopefully have done within a matter of weeks. There are additional plans in place, but I'm just not going to touch on them just yet. But yeah, thanks a million, lads.
It's all go around talking, lads. Improvements everywhere. Visual improvements. Improvements on the optics and improvements on the choice of beer.
Yeah, I think it's massive for the club as a whole in terms of where we want to go. Like, the growth is incredible, but it's not just the growth of the stadium. I think there's mentions of growth within the community, like stuff being done on Richmond Road as you walk up. It creates a real match day atmosphere, and that's kind of, I think, what the lads have, as and Pierce has hinted at it there about improving. And it's something I think, you know, you go to a game and you look at young fans coming to games, they want to turn around to their parents and say, I want to go again, I want to go again, it was great. And, you know, there's a lot to add to that. I think the music is a big one. And then obviously the new choices of drinks in the bar, it's great. Look, I'm all for improving everything. So fair play to all the lads, all their hard work. JR, the lads in the bar, for all the time they give up on a match day during the week and any other time. It's much appreciated, and it goes to show that there's a lot of hard work that goes into this. So it's great to appreciate these people and what they do.
Yeah, it was mentioned, I think it was at the fans forum actually, that like you could walk up the Richmond Road and not know there's a football club there because there's just no sign of anything. And I'm a big fan of the bit of art and murals, graffiti, whatever you want to call it, being put around the place, trying to jazz up the end where the scoreboard is going to be. I know there was talk of trying to cover the newsstand and flags and stuff like that, so it doesn't look like quite the eyesore as it has been. A big thing, and there was so much talk to fans forum about match day experience, and it was flagged by a few people about the queues in the bar, both before the game, particularly at half time, and it turns people away. Like, I've done it myself, I've gone to nip in at half time, and like, oh, here, I'll just grab a quick pint here, and you can't, like, the queue is literally out, like, towards where the white seats are on the halfway line. The queues were insane. Look, sign of the times, that just everything is kind of improving and attendances are going up, so you've got more bodies there. But the idea of trying to have a bottle bar somewhere, a bottle and can bar, I think is brilliant. Again, it was mentioned at the fans forum, it was a suggestion. All that stuff's all in the pipeline. The new toilets, very important in and around the bar area. just seem to be going in the right direction. As was mentioned there of like big moments in Shell's history, you know, getting murals or photos of them along the main stand on the Richmond Road. What would be your, if you can just, if a moment comes to your head, a really seminal moment in Shell's history that you'd want on that wall, what would it be?
Oof.
I'll put you on the spot now.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that. I would, for me personally, I'd be having Lorcan Fitzgerald putting it in against Strada up on it, but I don't know, that was obviously Wayne Strada, but yeah, that would be my one. That's the one, the first one that came to my head. I love Jack Moylan's goals, or sorry, Sean Boyd's goal against Bowes as well in the FAI Cup that time. Good question though. Yeah, if you're putting me on the spot to pick one, I'm going to go Lorcan Fitzgerald's goal against Drogheda. Some kind of image from that would be lovely.
Yeah, I have put you on the spot, so Ben, I obviously got a chance to think about this one, so I'll ramble on here, I'll talk rubbish for a minute or two, and then you can wrap your head around something else.
Ah, sounds good. Thanks for that.
He's showing his favours here, Ed. I wouldn't come back.
50-50 chance. He's had a 50-50 chance. Ben, I'm gonna cane you now in a minute, so don't you be getting too ahead of yourself. I would insist on something to do with Luke Byrne. Whether it's just a 23 or something, definitely something around Luke Byrne would be high on my list. The other one is, I love the image of Pearl outside the bar. You know, she has her hands out with the bucket hat on and she's looking out towards the riverside. I just think that's a class photo. I'd love to see that somewhere. But there's, like, when you think back, you're trying to isolate kind of particular moments. It's hard. I have such a bad memory. Like, my memory is horrendous. So trying to actually isolate a couple of moments is a tough one. Somebody actually, I meant to say, got on to me last week, and I think we were having a love-in about Luke Byrne, which there'll be plenty of as the season goes on. This fella got to me and said, are we not going to have the respect to mention the name of the man who paved the way for great Shelburne number 23s? Ben, do you know who he was talking about?
I'm going to shock you here, dude. I'm not following.
Ian Ryan.
Oh, wow.
I was thinking that there was a really good picture of when we got promoted in forgotten promotion back in the early 2010s. Ian Ryan actually scored in the game against Finn Harps when we got promoted, and he wheels away, and his fault of him kind of his hands up with 23 on the back. Oh yeah, there you go. I didn't realise there was a long list of great Shells under 20, of great Shells number 23s. Ben, give me one or two images you'd insist on being on that wall on Richmond Road.
I think you're definitely right. I think we're absolutely blessed with two of the best captains in Irish football, with Luke Byrne and Pearl. Though I think that image, I think it's in the bar as well, is absolutely iconic, with just the reds lit up in the floodlights, and it's just, yeah, I would agree with that. I think something for Luke Byrne, in my opinion, the greatest club captain I've ever seen. I don't know if it's controversial, maybe it's not, maybe I'm just too close to it, but he was just Shelburne for me. Like, he's just a leader, a role model, an icon, and I think he definitely should be immortalized somewhere. There's a great photo of him celebrating after, I think it was the Bowes game, cup game, in Tolkien, lovely sunny day, and he's just buzzing. The excitement on his face, I think, look, stick it up on the wall, immortalise it, make it there forever.
Hear, hear. I totally agree. We will move on to this Friday. Look, it's a Ringsend derby. It's a huge game. So early in the season, I think it was actually Mark Coyle said today at the press conference about, you know, already it's only the second game of the season and it's a huge game. Before we start getting into the ins and outs of that game Friday, we got a question in from Terry, and it's not doom and gloom. I'll give you Terry's question and I'll get your reaction off it. Lads, I'm seeing people online talking about us being able to challenge Rovers for the league. I personally think we're miles off that. And that's not meant as a slight on the Shell squad. I just think that Rovers are so, so far ahead of everybody else. Adam, agree or disagree with Terry?
Do you know what? I don't want to sit on the fence because I do agree that Shamrock Rovers are, you know, they are so good. Like, but I think there's scope for this Shell side. Like, I don't know. It's more doom and gloom, Steve. What's going on? No, look at
sticking with the team of the week.
He's right in a way. Look, Shamrock Rovers are very far ahead. You know, but they're this project that Bradley's been there for the longest time. This has been going for years in comparison to Duffer's time at Shell. So you would like to think there will be a point in time where Shells are back competing with Rovers. And look, it could easily be this season. You wouldn't know. I don't think the division's that big between ourselves and Rovers. Whether we're going to be the ones competing with them for the titles is another thing. We have a lot on our menu this year, don't we? So it'd be interesting to see. But I don't think that the gap of quality is that big between us, put it that way.
I mentioned it, I think it was in the first part of the season, that all that's lacking, somebody asked the question, like, what was lacking? What were we missing that would push us to the next level to be able to challenge Rovers? My answer to that was time. It's just, as you mentioned, lads, they're very far into that Bradley project, if you like. They're going for five in a row. It's totally unheard of. So, I don't think we're going to win the league, to be totally honest. I think if we qualify for Europe again, it would be brilliant. Ben, are me and Adam just two miseries? Stadler and Waldorf type stuff?
Look, miserable, yes. Realistic, also, yes. I think you have to look at it and say, look, Rovers are an ageing squad as well. You have to remember, like, this is towards the tail end of, I suppose, their project. Like, they've a lot of lads pushing up there. And look, if you look at our lads, where will they be 3, maybe 4 years down the line? That's pushing for leagues. Could they push for a league this year? Absolutely. What's going to stop them? I'm like, look, ambition. Go for it. Why not? Aim to win every game and you're in with a chance. But look, realistically speaking, I will have to double down on what you've said. And I'll have to agree, even though I didn't want to. I was going to say something mad and just for the sake of it. But no, I will agree.
Go on, Ben, say it. You may as well.
No, I think you're right. I think time is what's needed. And they've had it in abundance and it shows. Look, they have the results from it. And I think if we are given similar time with the players that we have, they could absolutely push for a league.
Looking at Friday, team-wise, Adam, look, we'll work off the presumption that Griff is injured. I don't know. I haven't a clue. Working off that presumption, and obviously we'll be without Boydie through the suspension, there's a forced change there. If Griffin doesn't play, what would be that change that you'd make?
I thought Camo did well when he came on the other night, so I don't see why he wouldn't play. The hope would be Paddy Barrett is match fit and can jump in. But I think, you know, a back three of maybe like Barrett, Temple and Ledwidge would be quite good. Gano kind of played more central than he towards the end of the game, and he done well. So the options are definitely there. I'd say Barrett would be the one I'd love to see come in. If he's fully fit, it'd be great to have him back.
Question there then is, if Paddy comes back in and Paddy's fit, that means you probably have to shove Lewis Temple out of the team. So, Ben, if you're Lewis Temple and the team goes out on Friday afternoon or whenever it does, and you're on the bench, you're probably suitably feeling hard done by?
I think yes and no. I think, look, you have to look at his own performance and say, did he warrant getting back in the team? Absolutely. But you also have to look at the game and the occasion. For such a young lad, you know, a Dublin derby at home to Rovers, like, that's a sold-out Talca Park. That is a big, big occasion. And for a big occasion, you need a big game player. And that's what Paddy Barrett is. Popped up with a big winner for us this year from a corner, which duty, as you'll know, is something that I shout for every time. But yeah, I think he's a big game player. And I think he adds a lot of composure to that back line and just ability. We saw Doody in the friendlies, and we saw it a lot last season. The crossfield balls, like the switches, my God, incredible. So, look, I would feel hard done by, but I think it's more of a, you'll get there, but it's such a big occasion. It's very hard, especially for a young lad to come in and be expected to deal with that.
I'm like working off meshing the two predictions together from you. Adam, would a back three of Cameron to the left of it, Gav Malloy in the middle of it, and Lewis Temple to the right of it, would that concern you going into a Dublin derby?
No, I don't think so. I think the two lads, you know, either side of Gav Malloy are very capable defenders. They're very young. So, like, it's one of those cases. Look, it is a big game. It's a derby. And going in, you would want maybe a more experienced defence going in. But I think if Duffer believes them, I think you have to give them the benefit of the doubt. So, no, to answer your question, I wouldn't be. Preferably, you would have Paddy Barrett in for his kind of big game capabilities, as Ben was talking about. But back three of Temple, Malloy and Ledridge, which would be quite good. I'd be quite comfortable going into the game with that, yeah.
I'd think I'd be pretty worried if that was the starting back three on Friday. Now, look, hopefully Paddy is fit, and I'm sure a fit Paddy Barrett plays. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I'd be a little bit concerned of a back three of Cam, Malloy and Temple. They're all more than capable, as you say, as really good players, good defenders. Just that little bit of, I think sometimes we're guilty of, well, I'm definitely guilty of, like, I'd just presume Gav Malloy has played like 200 league games a lot of the time, just because that's the kind of, that's the aura he gives off. But it would be a very inexperienced back three to win such a big game, and you're playing against experienced players up that top end of the pitch as well. From a Rovers point of view, like Aaron Green, I'm sure, would be rubbing his hands together. Rory Gaffney, they would be rubbing their hands together going up against a back three like that. But it's one of those you don't really know. Do you know, when Gav Malloy came into the team first, he played in some massive games, and you're kind of looking going, geez, I'd be a bit worried about a young lad going in there. And sure, look at him now, he's the best young defender in the country. So it'll be interesting to see the team. Look, Duffer's had no problem in making a rogue or a bold show going into big games before. Ben, with Burt not playing, what's the change you see up there?
I think it has to be Will Jarvis. And look, this isn't a knock on Shane Farrell, who was brilliant when he came on, but I think Will Jarvis from the start, just going at Rovers, that defence, it's what I'd want to see anyway. I think he, like, without him, there's also no goal. Like, his just getting the head down, direct running, it's something that, look, we could benefit from, and I think would be a real asset. So I think for me, I think that's the change.
Ads, yeah, you in that same boat?
Yeah, absolutely. I think in the game last season as well, up in Talla, I think Will Jarvis was great in the game, wasn't I? I know Burke threw one in at one point, but I think Will Jarvis caused Dan O'Cleary loads of problems in that game. And I know it's a bigger pitch up in Talla, but you would like to think if he gets to run out on Friday against Rovers, that he could have the similar effect. It's going to be interesting to see who plays around him as well. I think, you know, does the Sullivan get a start again? I'd imagine so. I think Matty Smith, We had a big love fest last week, didn't we, about Mike Smith? It didn't quite come to fruition, but you'd imagine he'd start as well. So I think a front three of Matty Smith, John O'Sullivan and Will Jarvis gives Rovers plenty to ponder.
Jarvis was brilliant in that game out in Talla last year. I specifically remember that performance. He was magic. I remember that was the live RTE game, I think, wasn't it? And I remember the pundits fawning over him as well, saying how kind of old school it was to have a player running at people like that. Look, there's no doubt it's going to be a tough, tough game. I fancy us to get something out of it. I think our home games are going to be massive this year, and the likes of a Jarvis who just runs at people, Matty Smith is the same, head down, dribble at people, causes chaos, defenders don't like defending against it. So yeah, I'm pretty hopeful of our chances. There's a little bit of housekeeping need to run through. John Brennan, the SLO, was on to me. There'll be another supporters bus running for the Sligo away game. That's on the 1st of March, and it's a Friday. I know usually Sligo play games on a Saturday. This game is on the Friday. That's owing to the Monday games following that match day. So we're playing Friday, Monday that week. That's why the game's on a Friday. So it's the 1st of March, Sligo away. It's €30 return. It leaves from Tolka at 3 p.m. If you want to book a seat, there's only a few spots left. There was OAP student and children slots. They're all gone. If you're an OAP, a child or a student, you could still get onto the bus. You just have to pay the full adult fare, which is a €30 return. Get on to John. It's 087-661-0927 to book a spot. As I say, it's nearly sold out at this stage. Speaking of sold out, gents, first home game of the season as of Tuesday afternoon is sold out. Could you have seen that coming in Cabinteely away in 2017, lads?
Oh, God. Feels so long away, that, Steve, doesn't it? You know, Cabinteely don't even exist anymore, don't they? Not like, it's crazy.
Thank God.
Yeah, thanks be to God. Yeah, no, you're right. No, look, it's great for the league, and I think the other Dublin derby as well, I think, I'm pretty sure that's sold out. So, like, we're reaching a stage with the league where, like, I think Dover's talked about standards before and raising them. And Shells are doing their bit. You see the renovations in the ground as well. We're trying as best we can. And we're getting to a stage now where clubs are actively, you know, not able to facilitate people coming into the ground. And that should tell the higher ups of the league and the government or whatever that, you know, the grounds need more investment and stuff like that. So, yeah, no, it's great to see. And thank God, Cabinteely aren't about.
Ben, there are... We're recording this on Tuesday evening. It's now 8:15. Before we start recording, you could still buy a season ticket, which would guarantee you entry to Friday's game and obviously all the home games going forward for the rest of the season. If you are trying to convince somebody to buy a Shelburne season ticket for 2024, what would you tell them?
Just be a part of something bigger. It's magic. It's friendship. It's family. It's drama. It's football. It's everything. Like, my whole week just leads up to looking forward to a Friday to see the football's almost secondary because it's such a big social occasion. It is your friends. It is your family. It's the people you want to see, people you want to be with. So, yeah, I think that's the best sell I can give. Dudie, would you agree?
Yeah, wholeheartedly. I 100% agree. Ryan sent us in a great question. We just aren't going to have time today to get it. I will get to it next week because it's a really, really good question and it'll give you two a chance to maybe think a little bit more about it because there's a lot of seasons that we could be rattling through. What we do need to do before we go is give our Richie rankings for the week. So we're all used to this by now. You can be a Richie Baker in life, sound fella, laid back, good crack, good football man, or you can be a Richie Winter who... robs sweets from kids, just an all-round bad fella. So this week, lads, you're going to start us off. Give me your Richie Baker.
I'm going to give it... Oh, the Richie Baker, sorry, is it?
Yes, let's start with some positivity. That's been a lot of it this week.
I know, yeah. That's why I was surprised. Richie Baker for the week, Shane Farrell for me. I thought he was great when he came on Friday evening. I think sometimes he gets stick from some part of sections of the crowd, and I thought he was really good. He was really effective on Friday. He does well for the goal. So yeah, he for me is my Richie Baker.
Ben?
I think Richie Baker, I'll have to go with the manager, just because, look, he had a few comments before the Waterford game about the greatest league in the world, and he was questioned, I suppose, by... the interviewer about it, and he's very impassioned in his response, and you know he's done something really good when opposition fans are like, yeah, fair play Duffer, you're dead right, because usually they're the first ones to hammer him. So I think he has to get it for me.
I don't have any positivity this week. I'm going to be suitably miserable.
Are you alright, Steve?
Stick with the team of the week. I'm going to be miserable. My Richie Winter for this week is, it's aimed at a thing, not a person. Pat's put out a video today on Twitter of them talking about their new jersey. The three players, can't remember who the three players were, but it's horrendous. It's horrific. It's so cringeworthy, you wouldn't believe. I don't know whether you have seen it yet.
Yeah.
Those of you that haven't seen it, go onto Twitter, have a look. I know it was probably supposed to be painted this way, of a bit of, you know, a bit of funny ha ha that they're looking at their new third strip. And like, it's the three lads come into the dressing room to look at the third strip and they're, oh yeah, do you like that? Yeah, yeah, I think it's a nice jersey. But the three dopes are wearing it already.
That's what I was so, lads, say.
Yous have seen the jersey, so yeah. I don't know whether that was part of it to try and be funny ha ha, but yeah, my Richie Winter is Pat could probably give it to them every week, to be totally honest. But Ben, who have you got?
You know what, we talked about that earlier. I was like, we mentioned it and we went to see the video and I was like, yeah, that was going to be my one, so thanks for that, dude, you really appreciate that.
As we need to start communicating, don't we? This is 2 weeks in a row now.
He said it in passing and I was like, you know what, yeah, that would annoy me. Like, I don't know whether it's just an oversight or it's just, it's done on purpose, but like, oh, that jersey, it's on it. It's on you. Stop it. No one's buying that. Yeah, I'm going to agree with you, dude. Look, I'll pile in on your misery. I don't want to add to the misery. I'll leave the adding to the misery to ads.
Ben, to be fair, originally my other Richie Winter earlier was, I could be totally wrong on this, but as far as I know, it was actually Chris Coleman's son. Obviously, he was being linked with the Ireland job and people were caning him for, like, you know, he went to Cyprus and was brutal and he went to here, there and he was brutal. And his son or some relative of his started quote tweeting all these people being like, you haven't got a clue what you're talking about. Like, that club were in a wreck when he went in and he dragged them up to sixth place and all this type of crack. But yeah, that's Richie Winter behaviour. Defending somebody's honour on Twitter. I mean, who would be at that kind of behaviour? Ads, who's your Richie Winter?
Richie Winter, I was going to give it to, I was actually going to give it to the interviewer for Duffer for his pre-match comments.
Oh, that's a great show.
I like, you've done it, Steve. I've done it for a while now. Like, the interviews before the game and obviously after the game, particularly before the game, usually the manager is quite tense and nervous because of the game that's about to come. So I can see what the dude's trying to do. He's, you know, I'm sure he's a lovely fella. I'm sure he didn't mean it in any way, but it just came across very sneering to kind of comment. And it was like he was biting back a bit. It was like, oh, I don't know if I'd agree with that. I just thought it was a bit much. And especially with Duffer in general, he is all about standards. And when he says that, I think in his heart of hearts, he means it. So. Yeah, I was going to give it to him, or I was going to give it to the chipper van in Waterford for not having any bottles of minerals or water. Like, what's going on there? Like, but yeah, that's my Richie Winter of the week.
You know what, as you're talking there about interviewing the manager before games, it's a horrendous experience. It really is. It's so bad. He gives you this look where, like, he kind of raises his eyebrows at you and kind of turns his head. And if you get that look off Damien Duff, you have said something really, really stupid. Just be warned. So if ever you're getting an old photo with the manager or something and gives you that look, you've probably said something very, very stupid. Just be warned. Friday night's game, it's live on LOI TV. Obviously, the game's sold out. If you can't make it, be there on LOI TV. Dave Armstrong is going to be on common. Terry, and a return to Talca Park for a certain Ian Morris, I believe, is going to be the co-commentator on Friday. Obviously led us to two promotions. I always felt Morrow never got the send-off he deserved, so if you see Morrow hopping around Talca on Friday, let him know how grateful you are for paving the way. Gents, I think we're there. Thanks very much for giving up your evenings, as always.
My pleasure, Duty. Thanks for having me and let me ramble on about the Reds for a bit.
Oh, Tolstoy. Thanks as ever. Always a pleasure.
There's worse things we could be doing. I am aware of an old change in audio there. After about 15 minutes, my audio changes a little bit. So I know stop giving out to me online for for the quality of the audio.
We're gonna fix it. Relax.
We're in the process of fixing it. Everyone is giving out about audio everywhere at the moment. We are going to fix it. Don't worry. Be patient. Look, the harder it is to listen to me, probably the better for everybody else. Gents, thanks very much. See us on Friday. Up the Reds.
Up the Reds.
Thanks for listening to the 1895 podcast, the official podcast of Shelburne FC, Dublin's finest since 1895. Don't forget to give us a 5-star rating on Apple or Spotify, and subscribe now to never miss a new episode.